Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Everyone, I'm so excited today. Today we have Amanda Pike, who's a Chief Operating Officer at Think Parallax. Amanda has spent more than 15 years helping organizations align people, purpose, and sustainability, which is very apropos. I'm in New York right now for UN General Assembly, Climate Week. There's a lot of talk on sustainability and climate in particular. So her career really started in environmental engineering, which now shapes her unique approach to organizational strategy and operations, treating workplaces like living systems that need balance, resilience, and connection. At Think Parallax, she leads with a focus on distributed leadership, scalable practices, and creating people-positive, sustainable workplaces where both businesses and individuals can thrive. So I really love chatting with Amanda because, you know, as a psychologist, like everything's a system, whether it's an organization or whether it's a team or whether it's an individual, things work together to, you know, kind of create the system. But Amanda, welcome, first off. And who are you? So for people who might not really know you yet, can you just share a little bit about your background and what shaped the way you think about sort of leadership and work and where you work, what you do, all the good things?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, thank you first for inviting me. I'm really excited to be talking with you again and sharing a little bit about, you know, what I've seen, what I feel works, what doesn't work, all the things. So yeah, thank you. Well, like you said, I'm an engineer by training, I guess I would say, but sort of the headline for my career has been natural systems. And I started out in sort of the natural systems in the wild, right? The uncontrolled ones, the ones that we study and try not to manipulate too much, at least not intentionally. And that's evolved into sort of natural systems in an organization, right? So how people sort of interact with each other, how we approach getting the results that we want as business leaders or organizational leaders, you know, really like how we think about that compared to maybe a more command control environment versus a natural system and what that means, what differences that are those things. And so, you know, I look back at how I got here and it's kind of an interesting journey. Like you, I'm a systems thinker. And so combining that with, you know, when I was younger, I didn't really understand the logic of how we interacted with the natural world. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s. And so things on TV that, you know, were environmental disasters, or even just the logic behind, you know, using something that was a toxic substance or burying something in a landfill. I just didn't understand logically, like why we would ever do that, you know? And so growing up, I had a bit of a panache for mathematics and science, chemistry, all of these sorts of things. And it led me to environmental engineering. I really wanted to be working on societal issues related to the environment. And I found my way into this field. The thing about environmental engineering is that it's very much reactive, right? We're cleaning up or addressing the mess that we've already made, whether it's air quality control or wastewater treatment. And I wanted to be on the other side of that. I wanted to prevent that from ever happening to begin with, or at least, you know, mitigate it as much as possible. And so when I was graduating from undergrad, I struggled to find a job that was really engaging for me because of that. Everything was sort of on the oops, now I need to go clean it up side of things. And so I guess what a lot of people do when they can't quite find the job they're excited about after school. I stayed in school. I went to grad school and I studied environmental engineering longer, focused in water resources. And I had a wonderful mentor along the way, my advisor, Randall Gentry. And he really understood what I was getting at. Like, how do we get into the proactive side of these decisions, really? And so he introduced me to a research institute at the University of Tennessee that was doing something called life cycle assessment. Today, we use terms like carbon accounting, product footprinting, that sort of thing. Life cycle assessment's still there, but it's a more technical term that not a lot of folks are necessarily familiar with. And I really found it fascinating. And so started off my career being able to help companies use science, use the analytics, use environmental fate and transport modeling that I learned in my engineering degrees to understand where impacts are coming from, where they're having the biggest impact from a water perspective, from a carbon perspective, from a toxicity perspective, and then help them make decisions to maybe change the way they're doing something in their own facility or work with different suppliers, work with their suppliers to make a positive change. So when I, as I was moving along in my career, I happened upon a really wonderful smaller organization that at the time was only 20 people across North America and Europe, and very highly focused on LCA, very technical. And I got the chance to learn even more deeply how that science worked. But because we were growing fairly quickly, we also need to be building the organization. And that's where I really got into operations. I took on the role of our U.S. Director of Operations and helped build out our systems here in the U.S., working with my European counterparts to do the same. That sort of evolved into a knowledge management role and even eventually leading sustainability internally for the whole consulting firm. And along the way, I was also watching myself to some extent, but also my colleagues really struggle on this, to some extent on this marathon that is sustainability work, right? If you're in this field, something that you know deeply is just how much pressure, how urgent it is, right? It's very time sensitive that we make change quickly. There's definitely a political charge to it back then and now even more. And a lot of people feel very personally motivated, right? They want to see change. And so it's easy to kind of take on too much work and really feel like you have to do everything all at once and you want to make change. And when it doesn't happen, it's demotivating. So I was playing this dual role of consultant and operations slash people in a lot of ways. And I realized that where I could really make change happen is to help energize the people who were the scientists and the engineers doing great work every day. I found I had a real knack for things like templatization and creating process and structure. And I wanted to share that with all of my colleagues and help them do great work, focus on the most important work, take away some of the administrative things that we need to do or simplify those so they could really make that change sooner, faster, right? And hopefully stay healthy along the way. So I really found a lot of reward in moving in that direction, understanding both the work, but then creating the environment for those change agents to do the best work of their lives. So that's how I got to where I am today. I lead operations here at Think Parallax. We're a strategy and communications firm focused in corporate sustainability. My day-to-day is really looking at all of our internal systems, processes across admin, IT, finance, project ops, business ops, and people and culture, and really putting in place those rhythms, those practices with a fantastic team. I've got about four people who are really, really just brilliant in their own work areas, and we bring it all together and kind of make the system run. So that's where I am today. It's been a journey.
Like such an intersection. Like what I'm hearing you say is that, just given your background really in environmental science and looking from a systems perspective, like from an environmental kind of, climate mm-hmm. sort of lens, like you can see the patterns, right? And it sounds like you just have a personal mm-hmm. knack for operations and like putting order to chaos, right? And some people are just great at that. I imagine you're a big J on terms of the MBTI, like, someone who puts order to things and then being in
that's right.
that like is purpose, and that you can do this all together. So you're kind of now in the COO role, putting sort of order to this company, looking through a systems lens from a preventative lens, like model. And I'm a health psychologist by training, and what you're talking about, there's a lot of parallel in the way we think about psychology, which is health psychology, it's the same model. Like psychology and medicine in general is very reactive. Health psychology comes at it from a preventative model. How do you take care of like lifestyle behaviors, stress management, sleeping, eating, exercise, all of that, and then put practices in place to not have some kind of major medical thing. And it sounds like you're looking at that from an environmental, and I think we're both looking at that from an organizational lens now. We're coming at it with these like different perspectives and found ourselves in kind of business. And just knowing that you've done this and you have this unique perspective, like, you know, you've talked in the past about like just being in a distributed workforce. You've been doing this for a long time, you know, 10 plus years, like figuring this out. And you said distributed leadership can both like motivate and disengage people. So like, what do you, you know, what conditions are really essential to make this successful? And then especially in organizations where there could be like limited, like upward mobility, right? How do you get people excited, engaged, you know, in a distributed place where you're not sure like how to offer them, you know, options in different ways?
Yeah, and that's real, especially in smaller organizations, right? If there's not a lot of turnover in leadership and in some of the more senior roles, how do you offer those opportunities for professional development and continued growth? I look to the concept of self-managed teams and to distributed leadership as a way to do that. I find that whole field just fascinating, but it also really aligns with the concept of natural systems and, you know, not putting too much order or structures in place because you want people to be able to kind of create their own paths and define what they're doing and to find what really, really lights them up. But when I think about self-managed teams, it's really about the employees, the teams, team members to be able to organize, self-organize to get the work done in the way they think, you know, will be best fit for the context and the challenges at hand. There's no micromanagement. It's really about coaching. And the more senior folks coach, everyone mentors each other, right? And it all comes down to decision-making. And so if we can put the decision-making responsibility in the hands of the person who's closest to the question at hand or the problem at hand, I find that's an incredible way to give people sort of the autonomy that they may be looking for in order to grow, or they may need in order to grow. Because when you are given a problem to solve, you have to figure it out, you know, how to do that, right? You have that accountability and suddenly you start thinking a little bit differently. If I have a checklist in front of me and I can just run through the checklist, I might not be critically thinking about what actually it means to go through each step. But if I have an outcome or a result that I personally need to achieve and that's on my task or my shoulders to do, I start thinking about it as, well, what do I know about this? What don't I know? Who can help me? Right? Why are we doing it like this? And so you start going through sort of the series of questions and you kind of engage in this knowledge finding exploration, frankly, and you might start testing things. But that's where it also becomes really important that you have the support around you, whether it's, you know, resources to continue external training or internal training, if it's someone that you need as a mentor or a coach to guide you along the way. So as an organization, we need to really think comprehensively about what it takes to help someone develop if you are giving them that responsibility to make certain decisions. I think the other thing about self-managing teams and distributed leadership that's a really important sort of watch out or sort of pitfall that leaders can fall into as they're transitioning into this thinking is not putting any structure in place or not enough structure, right? We don't want to overstructure a natural system. We want to nudge it into sort of the shape or keep it within some guardrails. And so it is really important that you kind of set that up well in the beginning and you're clear in expectations and where folks can play and where they can't. There was this really great study you might know of. I think it was out of Denmark, where they were, the researchers were looking at students who were playing in a playground, and they compared the students in playgrounds that had no fences to playgrounds that did have a fence. And what they were observing is that the students that were playing on playgrounds that had fences, they would explore further. They go all the way to the edges, right, of the fencing. Whereas the folks who did not, they would stay kind of huddled up in groups or around the equipment. And the way that, for me, that translates to a business environment is, you know, if you give folks sort of those, again, those guardrails, those bounds, they know where they can go explore. They know how far they can kind of push things. And maybe when they hit the fence, they'll start asking questions like, hey, is it okay to just to kind of like go right on either side there? My ball went over there, right? I need to go get it. And so it really opens up that kind of conversation and kind of lets people go to sort of the extremes that you as a leader are also comfortable with without having to go back and ask for permission or approvals or things like that. You know, part of that could be even looking at your values very closely, making sure you have those values well communicated and you're demonstrating those, right? And so making sure that your team is always making decisions through that lens. I mean, values are very important sort of guardrail or filter that we want to make sure everyone clearly understands well. But I think ultimately, the reason self-management and distributed leadership works is because we, as an organization, we are a natural system, right? As humans, we come together in very complex ways and we create these complex relationships and interactions. And it reminds me of the discussion, the difference between complex and complicated. Is that something that's come up for you?
Nope, I wanted more. Tell me more.
Yeah. So complicated system. And these feel like synonyms, but there's a case to say that they're not, I guess, in my mind. So complicated is when you have a system that is composed of parts that you can disassemble. You may not be able to see how they're all connected immediately, but you can disassemble them. You can figure out how they work together eventually, maybe with some learning. It's a lot of rules, a lot of processes. With a complex system, there's so many nodes and connections that all you can hope to do is manage that system. There is no algorithm that's going to give you exactly, you know, the outcome, a predictable outcome, no matter how many variables you try to put into the equation. And so there's a lot of really great sort of research and writing on this. Frederic Laloux might be someone you're familiar with, his Reinventing Organizations. That comes to mind, you know, which is sort of the evolution of consciousness and how we organize based on what the needs are of our teams. There's also a great book I recently read by Coco Crum. She's a statistician. It's called The False Promise of Optimization. You know that one too.
Ooh, no, but I want your reading list, just like, you know, and I'm happy to share mine too, but these are the kinds of books I love. But I think what you're hitting on, and it's like, it's just like we're using different words, but it's the same concepts. So it's like you're talking about humans' yes. need for, like, you know, right? So I teach motivation, what drives human behavior in the workplace. And so the students right now are reading Daniel Pink's work, okay. like Drive. And so there's like three concepts he really focuses on: autonomy, mastery, purpose. That people, humans are really purpose-driven, purpose maximizers, right? Not like profit maximizers. And the things that help people increase motivation is like creating opportunities for autonomy, for mastery. We're like a learning species. We want to learn and grow. And then purpose, how do we connect this to like a larger thing? And I feel like you've created this system in your organization to allow teams to like kind of meet those like human needs in a very real way. And then the other thing you're talking about is, and I love that metaphor of the fence. So, you know, there's a, and we're kind of joking about it earlier, but like humans have a need for safety, right? And so when there's boundless, when there's no fence yes. at all, it can feel really overwhelming or scary. You don't know, like there's no rules, right? And so there's, and as humans, we have different comfort levels with structure versus unstructure. And people on our teams are all over the map in terms of their like preferences. I actually just wrote, we do this like biweekly newsletter. Yeah. The thing I wrote about this week, that's coming out today, is really about how do you hold ambiguity and create structure at the same time? Because like both are important, right? You have to be able yeah. to flex around it. But how do you set this up in a systems way that like meets those human needs of both safety and freedom? But I just love listening to you because Absolutely. You found a way to structure this. And then I want to read all your books too on top of it.
Yeah. Excellent. I'll send you the list. I can give you one concrete example of how we decided to organize Think Parallax, at least at this stage of our journey, to try and balance exactly what you're saying, structure versus flexibility. So when I joined, we were about 12 people. We quickly grew to mid-20s, where we are now. And we realized we needed some sort of organization, some way to kind of let people know, like, where do you live? What are your roles and responsibilities in a more sort of a concrete way with, again, that ability to flex as needed as we were growing, right? Not over-promising or over-structuring. So we were looking at all the different ways that people were self-organizing already. And what we landed on was really three structures that we now lean on today. The first one is the core one, and that is our team, right? The concept of team. So we have four teams at Think Parallax. One is a consulting team called our strategy team. We have a creative team of graphic designers. We have a client engagement team, which is marketing and sales. And then we have our operations team, which is all of our other internal practices and work areas. So we have those four teams, and that's a primary way that we sort of organize or think about how we're organized. But we have a lot of cross-cutting kinds of projects. I mean, whether it's client work or the internal projects, for sure. And so how could we think about that? We landed on two additional structures, communities of practice and committees. So communities of practice gather all of the people who have similar responsibilities. Our project managers, for instance, one community, our growth community, which is everybody who has sales responsibilities, and they meet and work on the things that are common to their accountabilities, their responsibilities, even though they may sit on different teams, right? And then our committees are even more fluid. So committees are our structures, our teams that kind of pop up as needed and go away as a problem is solved. So if we have a very specific need, we'll create a committee for that. And anyone in the organization can volunteer to be part of that committee. But some of them are more evergreen. So we have a DEI committee, we have an internal sustainability committee, et cetera. And those folks are responsible for some of the cross-cutting initiatives, things we need to get done. And so as people come and go, these committees and communities, certainly the teams, they change. But also it allows people to say, hey, you know what, I've been leading this committee for the past 2 years, and I'm ready to kind of do something else. And so someone else can kind of step in. And there becomes more leadership roles because we have more sort of formations of people in different ways, even though we're a small company, you know, again, low turnover among our senior team members. So even if folks can't find ways to necessarily climb a ladder so directly, they can find ways to take on more responsibility, different accountabilities, vertically or horizontally, or even create new ladders. We were just talking about this yesterday. There's always opportunity for us to look out into the market and say, what is needed? Like, what else are our clients asking us for? Maybe there's something we haven't even thought about, a whole new service area. So if someone wanted to kind of dive into that and try and grow it, maybe they create a whole new ladder. Like maybe we have another, you know, sort of set of services and we need to create a whole new team for that, right? And then they've now created their own ladder, vertical ladder, if they really want that. So there's all sorts of ways. It takes some entrepreneurship, but it also takes some from leadership to be able to create those sort of more formalized opportunities for people. So it comes from both ends.
Wait, I love that so much. And I want to take a deeper dive. This is just so interesting. I would love to like read your handbook or something one day, because I feel like you've put so much thought into this. And there is this entrepreneurial spirit that's just really built in, that's empowering your people. And you're honestly looking at your organization like, this is where we are. We want to keep you. How do we kind of create spaces knowing that you're going to want to learn and grow too? And there's opportunity in that for the both the business and the individual about like really looking to the market to say like, how do I build something? I know we should probably get ready to wrap up. So Finn is, you know, like Finn's our editor. He's always like, Bobby, stop talking. But as we're getting ready to wrap up, is there anything that I didn't ask you or that you'd want to share, or a book or something that's like been really meaningful for you?
Ooh, great question. I would just say, I guess, a couple of things. I really appreciate all these sorts of conversations and folks like you, Bobby, meaning people to come and have these discussions, because I believe that we are on this precipice of great transformation in terms of how workplaces operate. And there's been a lot of research and it's been a journey to get here. But just like with environmental sustainability, there's the workplace sustainability, and that is so needed. And I go back to my sustainability roots or my environmental roots, but you know, we need people who are doing fantastic work and focusing on, you know, making change happen in order to create the future that we all want. So thank you so much for convening all these great minds and having these really wonderful conversations to share ideas and examples.
Oh, well, thank you for coming. And I feel the same. Like, it's a really unique time, sort of post-COVID, and just for a whole bunch of different reasons. But I too feel like there's huge opportunity to like just have us function better as humanity by making work better. And then looking from all these different lenses to be like, all right, how do we learn and grow together? And I'm just really excited. But thank you so much, Amanda, for spending time today. And, you know, we'll hope to have you back on or continue the conversation soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again.